right, welcome back to the show. Hello, it's me, Chance. We didn't do a formal intro this week because now that we're doing solo episodes, I've decided I'm not going to talk for 12 minutes at the beginning of every episode. I'm here today with my guest, Alex Hanna. Alex, how the hell are you, bud?
I'm good. Nice. I feel vibrant, excited to be here. Glendale, California, the Jewel City, they call it.
You know it's the Jewel City, huh?
Of course, yeah. Why wouldn't I know that?
You're a local.
There's so many Armenians who have so many jewels. Of course, it's the Jewel City.
That is exactly right. Yeah. And you know what? And they're really happy to see you.
They are happy to see you.
Really pumped that you're here. I recently discovered that they are at the base of the Caucasus Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So that led me to be like, well, what's true here? Are they? Because I was like confused about like, what is an Armenian person? Are they technically? Is it like a Mediterranean thing? Is it like Spanish and Italian people are like kind of different? And my answer that I got was stop asking questions.
Yeah, you got to stop asking questions.
Basically.
I have an Armenian friend who's from Boston, mm-hmm. and he does not like the Armenian people in LA because he thinks that they're a bad representation of the culture.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is
there's a lot of infighting. I think that's true of, like, you know, a lot of people who have, like, moved to other cities.
Yeah.
And become, like, a part of the culture in cities.
Yeah. There's also a lot of, like, I don't know. I'm learning more and more as I get older that everybody's kind of awful to each other at all times. Like,
yeah.
I am recently become privy to like the racism amongst Asian people against other Asian people. I'm like, oh my goodness. Well,
I once called a Korean man Chinese and Vietnamese, and he wanted to swing on me.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. That's interesting. How do you feel about the Ukraine? Don't you think we've had enough?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know if your algorithm is fucked up in this way, but I keep getting like this like news broadcast man being like, today Russia like three civilian buildings in Russia were drone striked today, and they're blaming the Ukraine. And I'm like, this sounds terrible. Like, why am I hearing about this on TikTok and not like CNN? You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's like they're thinking of banning Twitter in the EU because of all the disinformation.
Wow.
But I think that's like part of the reason why they're trying to ban TikTok in various places.
Yeah.
It's because there's too many titties in people's faces.
I agree.
And they're getting distracted. They can't work. They can't be a good worker.
That's right. Well, because
there's a lot of like 18-year-old women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, being weird.
Yeah, no, being weird is right. The crazy thing is it's like if you look, Chinese TikTok and American TikTok are like two totally separate apps. People have talked about that, how it's like for kids, like if you're under 18 and on like TikTok in China, it's all like science and math and like learning how like so like important stuff. It's like educational, and here it's like go kill your parents. It's brutal. You're not a clips guy, I've noticed.
I hate online culture. It sucks so much.
Yeah. I'm so happy.
I just don't like crowd work. I don't like the people that get a lot of stuff off of it. I'm just like, I think the algorithm, I've been told by people who are familiar with it, engages with young, hot people the most, and that's what fuels like generation of clicks, and then kind of the peripheral comedy stuff is not as important. And I value comedy too much for me to delve into the online world and let fucking Mark Zuckerberg control my life or whatever, whoever owns TikTok.
I'm so happy that you're saying all this because I feel extremely similarly with stand-up. It's like I feel weird. Even like the other night I was doing a set and there was a bit that I was like, I think this would be a good little chunk to put somewhere.
Yeah.
And in my head, I was up there and I wasn't thinking, how is the audience liking this? I was thinking, all right, really enunciate this next part because we're filming it.
You're filming it.
And it's like, oh, it feels gross, you know?
Yeah. I like when somebody, I have like a bunch of sets just recorded. I like when somebody's recording me just so I can like kind of not think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I choose to post it later, it's also like, I don't know, they'll, it's weird cause there's no specials being made unless you're like Taylor Tomlinson or Sebastian Maniscalco, these like big behemoths of comics. Yeah. It's like, you know, you never really get to do anything and get to showcase your stuff. So it's good for, like, you know, smaller comics who are trying to showcase that they have an aptitude for it. But for me, it's just like I'm working, so it's like I don't really need to do it. And then it'd be nice to have like a career where you're making like hundreds of thousands of dollars or whatever. Yeah. But the people who I've seen do it are also the saddest people I've ever met. So
interesting. Yeah,
it's really difficult for me to kind of like pursue that when I know that's just kind of riddled with abuse of your own self.
Right. And it's something I've noticed with people that are like all about the clips, are always posting clips nonstop, like every little interaction on stage, they like overdo it. Almost 10 times out of 10, that is a person that I categorize as, oh, you're not a funny person. You just learned how to do an impression of what a stand-up comedian
is. That's right.
It's like usually like a hot guy that's just like, I know how to be kind of mean.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it blows my mind how big these followings are getting and how much people are getting from them. But I have to believe in my heart of hearts that it's all going to go away. Like, it's so oversaturated with the clips, you know? Like, I feel like there's a bubble that's just going to burst eventually. And it's like, all right, folks, we want to go back to watching, like, a long-form set on, like, a real TV screen again, you know?
Yeah, I think, like, the Matt Rice will always have a career, whether it's, like, as big as it is now or he's making, like, millions of dollars or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, Dane Cook had the same kind of bubble explosion, you know,
it's true.
The bubble pop.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's always, like, a few people that I like who are doing it. But, you know, as just, like, an institution, it kind of, like, upsets me. Especially because like people aren't thinking about, you know, the room. They're thinking about how can this generate kind of other fanfare for me, or how can I tour off this or whatever, which is good for some people and really horrible for some audiences.
Right. Yeah. And that's ultimately like, I like making like sketches and like funny videos in that way. Like that I like doing and posting. 'Cause it's like, I was like, whenever I got into this whole thing, I was very, I romanticized like kind of the old school way of it's like you do like a TV show where you're a character and people love you from that, and then they buy tickets to see you live, and it's like a special experience because they don't often see footage of you live, and you live your life that way, and then eventually you get to make your own TV show.
Yeah, like a
and,
folk hero.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I sort of like see Paul myself Bunyan. As a Paul Bunyan, yes. It's I think it should be special whenever people buy the ticket and leave the house to come and see like a special, like a moment, if you will, you know?
Yeah. I also, I mean, like I like the Mulaney special. Mm-hmm. We were kind of talking about Mulaney before this, but the idea that people have so much access to you really is annoying. Like my friend after, Ari Shaffir had that tweet about Kobe Bryant like dying and him being, you know, a rapist or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't condone that if LA wants to get mad at me. But he had like a bunch of death threats like sent to him on Instagram and stuff like that. And then my buddy Cooper like messaged him and was like, hey, how do you feel about the fallout of all of this? And he was like, ticket sales are up. It feels nice to be kind of selling out places and touring a lot and stuff like that. But you know, that kind of griminess of the business is kind of, it doesn't affect me in a good way.
Yeah, it's icky. I don't know. What I'm most, like, pissed off about is in the state of things, if I may be an old man and rant a little bit here, is I hate that I could, in theory, start a new Instagram account, put up a bunch of doctored videos of me that make it look like I'm in front of a crowd with fake laughter, buy 500,000 followers and buy hundreds of thousands of views for all those videos, and go to any comedy club in America and show my phone to the owner, and I'll get booked for a weekend.
Yeah.
Like, that is what is really blowing my mind. And it's also, like, indicative of, it feels like, because I moved to LA in 2020, so clubs were closed for the entire first year that I lived here. And then when they reopened, it was this thing where, hey, we lost our shirt. We need to make money and sell tickets. Yeah. And so the idea of developing younger comics kind of went out the window.
Yeah.
Especially at like the smaller like mom and pop shop clubs around town. And so that, I feel like it's harder to catch the wave and get quality stage time. So you got to go really looking for it, which I'm not opposed to, but it's just frustrating when it's like, oh, there used to be a system where if you're a person who understands how to do this and has a certain level of talent, you'll get booked because you're funny, not because you can bring 30 people, you know? It's a damn shame.
Oh, yeah. I started out in a good era of stand-up comedy where it was like post-Louis kind of. Everybody was more aware of stand-up.
Yeah.
And Rogan was like huge and becoming like the behemoth that he eventually became, where he's making like $100 million off Spotify.
Crazy.
But it was more accessible, and that was good and bad because you like saw a bunch of freaks and weirdos, but you could actually get like tangible stage time. During the pandemic, I didn't do any comedy because I was just like, this isn't what I was rooting for when I started.
Yeah.
I'll just, you know, get a job and figure stuff out.
Yep. I didn't do a single Zoom show.
Oh, yeah, you can't do those.
That sounds terrible.
I did a Zoom podcast. I wanted to kill myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even those are bad. Yeah. I hate doing, like, Zoom and Discord meetings. Like, there's something. I don't like FaceTiming.
Yeah.
I was dating someone, and she was like, let's FaceTime all the time. And I was like, this makes me feel. So, it's a weird, uncanny valley thing. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I hate it.
I already ingest too much of my life through a screen. Especially since like Zelda just came out.
Oh,
so
Jesus
I'm really
Christ.
Like, you know, involved in that world.
Yeah.
And also it's like, you know, it's an escape for a lot of people. Just like if you want to spend time with somebody, just spend time with somebody. I don't need to like get a commercialized thing involved. But and Apple doesn't need to know who I am.
That's right. I've been saying that for a long
time.
Yeah,
Tim Cook can get sucked by freaking hog.
Dude. Oh, shit.
Yeah, oh, shit.
Oh, my God, we're doing this on an Apple product. I tried to listen to, and this is really sad, I tried to listen to the audiobook of the Steve Jobs book. And,
oh, yeah.
I couldn't get through it.
No.
It's like, at a certain point, you can only tell the story so many times of, yeah, the guy didn't really know what he was doing. He was good enough, but he mostly had a business savvy that a lot of the other freaks didn't have.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not that complicated of a story.
He had a psychopathic hunger for power and money.
Yes.
And so he made a lot of sense being the head honcho of the richest company in the world.
Yeah.
But
what he didn't have was a will to live or trust scientists.
Yeah.
He would That's rather like, go out on his shield.
Yeah, the problem with all of those kind of super rich guys, I think it's maybe changed a little bit, but they really don't like taking advice from anybody else. Yeah, I was thinking about this on the ride over, you know, like the comedians that I don't like the most are just comedians who are like shielded by comedy.
Wow.
They just think that they're like, oh, I can say anything and I don't have any recourse because I'm like protected by a shield of comedy.
Yeah.
Like, you're like an idiot. I think. You're like a bozo. Like, just because you say stuff doesn't mean, into a microphone doesn't mean you have like a diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The best are people that, it like take Burr, for example. Burr is a master at taking a topic that you should, that everybody should go, oh shit, no, don't say that.
Yeah.
But doing it like tastefully and not even just tastefully, just like so honestly and kind of self-deprecating is also a big part of it, how he always shits on himself. But there's ways to say fucked up stuff well, not just for the sake of like, do you understand how insane it is that I just said that, you woke idiots? Like, is really
anytime anybody says woke, I'm just like, you're like a boomer.
Yeah.
You're like you're like 60 years old mentally.
Yeah, you're really
even
sad.
if you're like 32 or whatever, and you're just like, this woke culture is a stranglehold on, you know, America. I'm just like, who hurt you? why are you so upset by this? Like, what? I get that Gen Z doesn't like you, but you're old to them, so
right.
Why do you want them to like you?
Yeah, it's like, can you just like fucking touch some grass?
Yeah,
or, you know, like that whole thing.
Stay offline for like a day.
It's simple, and it's like, One of the saddest things I've ever seen in my entire fucking life. I was watching the show Reacher on Amazon Prime.
Oh,
are you
yeah.
aware of it?
Yeah, yeah, I'm aware of Reacher.
Have you seen it?
Jack Reacher, of course.
Yeah, with the big Alan Ritchson, the fucking guy that looks like Superman. Mm-hmm. If he was an Aryan.
Yeah.
I loved that show, and I loved Blue Mountain State, and I realized, like, I've enjoyed this guy for a good chunk of my life. Like, I'm going to give him a follow online. Like, I'm going to go wonder if he's got Instagram, and I, like, found it, and that's how I found out he has this video up on his Instagram where he's dressed like a youth pastor. He's got, like, burnt orange, like three-quarter, like, t-shirt, and, like, with the buttons undone, and, like, a backwards baseball cap with a leather strap, and he's, like, talking to a camera in his room, and he's like, the word woke. I hate the word woke. It's one of the worst things that we have as a society. It stands for the end of a conversation, the end of original thought. And I was just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You won, you idiot. Why aren't you just out putting your dick in olive oil and enjoying the fruits of your amazing career? He had to take the time to set up a camera in his room and rehearse a little speech. Uh-huh. Like, that is a really dark, that's really dark to me.
Yeah, it's like mentally suffocating. Also, it's the end of your conversation. It's not the end of, like, everybody's conversation about it. You're making this very, selfish. Yeah. The same guy thing happened to the guy from Chuck, Zach Levy.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
I remember
and
this,
he
yeah.
turned into like a huge like right-wing kind of conspiracy guy,
mm-hmm.
which I like Chuck. But, you know, I don't care about some guy, buddy, you know. Yeah. Also, anybody who uses woke is like right-wing now.
Right.
They yeah. like anybody who's like in the culture is like way beyond that.
Yeah.
Like word.
It's
that was just like a Childish Gambino song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To most people, and then for like right wing kind of like Ben Shapiro types, mm-hmm. become this kind of boogeyman mm-hmm. of like cancel culture adjacent stuff.
Yeah.
Because everybody's over cancel culture too.
I know. It's an interesting thing because it all just naturally happened. Like, there wasn't all these guys, like, there's certain like alt-right sort of extremists like with that have big platforms that were like, we're gonna march right in there and end this. It's a war of culture and thought and blah 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 blah. And none of that is what has caused this shift of like people kind of relaxing on things lately. It's just natural.
Yeah.
It's just the ebbs and flows of a culture. It's like, yeah, for a while we'll swing this way, and then we'll swing back to the middle, and we'll swing the other way. It's been going on since fucking Adam ate the apple, you know? But
and to me, it's just like a symptom of everybody just being like upset about, you know, the general state of things because we, you know, don't do a good job manicuring society.
No, it's a crossroads of being upset with things that are real and then being bored enough to invent things that aren't real to rage against. It's like the whole QAnon movement is just a bunch of people that probably work a 9-to-5 job. They live in Shitsville, Ohio, or mm-hmm. whatever, Iowa, these states that don't matter. I'm kidding, of course. And they just like, they come home and they're covered in mustard or whatever it is they're covered in, and they can turn on their damn computer, and for 2 hours, they're not Bill, the manager at the sit and stop.
Yeah.
They're William, the warrior for children.
Yeah, pedophile warrior.
Yeah, exactly.
That, and they're also not wrong. There's like a bunch of weird stories about, you know, Hollywood pedophiles
and
the Epstein stuff and, you know, all of these credible things.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like, you know, using that for like malicious acts towards people who, you know, don't have any ideology politically. They're just like psychopaths who are like selfish. It sucks ass.
Yeah.
Also, that's why I was addicted to World of Warcraft when I was like 14, is because I wanted to escape reality and be like a warlock against evil, you know?
Yeah.
But I wasn't, you know, trying to attack teenagers online for, you know.
Yeah.
Believing that, you know, Hillary Clinton probably was not a pedophile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you weren't running around the White House or the Capitol building screaming and pouring piss on things. Yeah.
There was, even before the Capitol riot, you know, the January 6th stuff, there was a guy who came to the White House with like a knife.
Yeah,
and there's like
that.
A video of him just getting fucking rocked by Secret Service. Oh, I mean, if people want to do that, then they're more than welcome to. I like that stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of fun.
But, you know, it's the same thing. Like, even, I think we turn everything into like this hyper, like, a bad thing, because you know the Patriots cheated in football, and everybody, there was like boos for like, you know, a Belichick and Tom Brady and stuff, but since Tom Brady was such a winner, they like kind of died out, and that's like not part of his legacy anymore, with like the Inflategate and the recording on the field. I was at freaking Dodger Stadium on last Monday, and some guy who was on the Astros was like a cheater during the Astros, and they were booing the fuck out of him. I feel like everybody just needs something to hate.
Yes.
And it's nice, you know, when like politics are this charged to like find that really juicy thing to hate. And everybody hates pedophiles. They're really bad people.
Exactly.
I'll say it.
That's
the
one.
Say it.
Yeah. You heard it here first, folks.
You heard it here first. Come on.
It's why shows like To Catch a Predator, it's one of my favorite shows. Because it's like you get to watch a guy who's one of the worst guys have the worst moment of his entire life. Like you look in their eyes and it's like, oh, no, it's over.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful to me. But the politics thing is, it's like, I always say right now it's like wrestling. It feels like pro wrestling. It's like fucking, it's not about, I've always, me and some of my friends in college, whenever, like, because I was in college when Trump got elected and all this stuff, and I was friends with a lot of like political communication majors.
Sure.
And they were all like, this is not how it's supposed to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Politicians are supposed to be fucking nerds that just like sitting and reading about policy and drafting things and are like kind of socially, this isn't, why is this guy beating his chest like this? That's the beginning. When fucking Trump would get up there and call like Jeb Bush's wife a dog or whatever. It's like, oh boy, we're opening up a box here.
He also was very funny and
hilarious.
He gets a lot of credit for being very funny, but you know, I don't need a funny guy in charge.
Exactly.
I have funny people in my life. They shouldn't be running anything.
Yep.
They should be running, they should be running like a t-shirt company.
Mm-hmm.
They should be running like, you know, posters.
Yeah, that's fun.
They should be running, you know, barely comedy clubs, like, they don't need to be running the country and like having policy that's enacted for people who are like, you know, hard struggling to get by. And he's not like good for that.
No. It's like Lorne Michaels on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Seinfeld was like at him, and he and Lorne was like, there's different types of people in the world, and it's like the world is like a zoo, and there are the apes, like, or there's the gorillas and the bears, and they're the action stars, and they're the ones that'll fire a gun from a helicopter, and there's the lions, and they're like the Brad Pitts and the hot guys. But everyone loves to see the monkeys, and that's what the comedians are. They're the monkeys. And I'm like, that is a perfect sort of, like, if we're talking in those terms, I want my politicians to be like an elephant.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm saying now I am a Republican.
Yeah. And Republicans also branded themselves really well. They're like the right, which is like correct.
The right way,
the right way, you know. They got a big elephant instead of a donkey.
Yeah.
I don't get why we got a donkey still.
That's,
we got
the
a
worst.
Rebrand.
I know. We should have like a liger or something, which is an animal that I thought was fake up until last year.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that those things actually got made.
No, but they're sterile. So,
oh.
Yeah, they're the last of their generation, the last of their kin. Did you know about that?
My God, no, I didn't. I'm learning right now. You, that's a fun animal fact. When did you start doing comedy? When did you first grip the mic?
November 2012.
Okay. That was...
Yeah.
I did, mine was June 4th, 2013.
Oh, wow.
So around the same
time. Yeah, around the same time.
Yeah, that was, because you said like around like the Louis era was, and I was like, yeah, but I was in Springfield, Missouri for the first four years of it.
That's a harsh place to start doing stand-up comedy. I can't imagine the scene was like incredibly decent.
No, well, dude, we had the good thing about it was that there was a scene. It wasn't like three people in the back of a library, like, do or whatever. It was, you know, there was like two open mics in town at these bars. They were only once a month, though, each one. And the one I went to was called The Laughing Stock with Myrrh. And the hosts, his big joke was he'd get up there. His name's Mark. He's like, "Hello, everybody. Thanks for coming out to The Laughing Stock with Myrrh. I'm your host, Myrrh. My name is Mark, but I drink whiskey, so my name is Myrrh. Well, anyway, let's get started."
Yeah. I love anyway.
Yeah. And so that's where I started. And two highlights of that were one guy had a thick Southern accent and also a speech impediment, so he sounded British.
Yeah.
And he was like, "You know, the worst thing about McDonald's is," and it was, he was very bad. He would wear a white fedora on stage, and he once ran a show at a bingo hall 30 miles outside our town that he booked me on, and no one but my family came to it. It was like my mom and my grandma and some friends, and I went up and I did my, like, 18-year-old, like, "Here's how I feel about stuff," jokes. And then the guy immediately after me, and this is the other fun guy to note, he's this big, like, 400-pound man with a blue mohawk, and he was just telling a story about how a woman with no legs in a trailer park wanted him to eat her pussy. And my grandma left after that, but that guy got arrested for sex trafficking in, like, Virginia or something, like, a few months later. So these were the people I was starting with.
Yeah, there's a lot of crazy folks. There's a guy in my scene who is, like, online bullying this notable journalist and threatened her with a knife and a gun and threatened to, you know, rape her and stuff. And that was no good for nobody. And he got banned from the scene pretty quickly after that. And was just like, "You guys don't understand what comedy is about." And there were like hundreds of comments of Facebook pages, you know, dedicated to this kind of scandal.
Yeah.
There was this guy in New York that my buddy Jace knew who, like, killed his mom. He was, like, doing open mics at the time.
He
was, like, trying to be, you know, a comic or whatever. Christ. But he killed his mom in Virginia and then drove up to Rockefeller Center and tried to get in because he was like, "Lauren Michaels gave me a phone call that I'm going to be on Saturday Night Live," and they arrested him for the murder, like, outside of Rockefeller Center.
Jesus.
Yeah, everybody in comedy who's, like, not... That's why I have, like, I keep people at arm's reach before I get to know them. It's just because I've been, like, it's been a whole decaying structure of people who I know who are generally bad and ill-fit to be a human.
Generally bad. Yeah. No, that's, like, I always say with getting into comedy, it's, like, it's not, you can just start.
Anybody could do it.
Yes, exactly. And that is a good
anybody can sign up at an open mic.
Yes, and it's like a high school football team. Like in the movies, there's this idea that's like, no, there's tryouts for the football team. But in my experience, no, you just sign up and they give you a helmet and pads. Mm-hmm. And that's why that first month of practice is the hardest imaginable to weed out the bad people who don't actually want to be there. It's the same with like starting an open mics. It's like, oh, you're a fresh faced kid that like loved watching comedy specials his whole life and people told him he was kind of funny. Why don't you go into hell? Why don't you go into the pits of hell and see all these guys your parents' age that have one too many Led Zeppelin t-shirts there's a darkness there.
Yeah, it's also like a need to express yourself because you don't get to do that in like real life, but people have a bad way of expressing. They don't realize that it's like a performance art.
It gets really rough out there. What part, whereabouts was your first?
So I started in Seattle. I did my first open mic at the Comedy Underground, which was run by this guy, John Silver, and he's generally a bad guy. and his cook used to sell cocaine out the kitchen and was all coked up all the time. And my buddy Albert got into like a verbal confrontation with him about something, I don't know, him being weird to a woman or something like that.
Yeah.
And the guy pulled a knife on Albert like in the comedy club.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's only check that's bounced in comedy for me is from that club.
Yeah.
And it was a check for $20. So it was pretty, you know, nasty.
Yeah.
But that club closed down because
Why?
It was poorly run, managed.
It sounds pretty standard issue for a comedy club.
But it was a good scene at the time. There was a lot of stage time, and there was a lot of like various forms of stand up, or what people thought were various forms of stand up at the time, a lot of weirdos, a lot of wackadoos.
Yeah.
And then I moved down here in like 2014, 2015.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I started in Missouri when I was in college and then moved to Chicago right after. And I did stand up and sketch and improv. And that is like not many people do that in Chicago. And the ones that do, it's like kind of a weird thing where it's like, the improv and sketch people are all like theater kids, like playing pretend in a treehouse, and the stand-ups are like the teenagers smoking cigarettes at the bottom of the treehouse, like yelling names at them.
Yeah,
and so like I kind of alienated certain groups of people in both. But that, in that same spirit, the idea of like there being so much of like stand-up or like sketch and improv people that would bleed into stand-up, and I would watch them like the light leave their eyes whenever they did their first open mic, or like there's a lot of character comedy in Chicago. Yeah. That's like Chicago's big thing, is like you go up there in a big hat and it's like, I'm Bill Penis. Sometimes those things work, but sometimes they don't.
I've seen a lot of people fucking flame out on stage. Yeah. I watched this show that they used to have at UCB Franklin called Celebrity Barf Machine.
Oh, good.
And it's only on Halloween every year, and they have a panel of judges, and then they have people do the most insane fucked up shit. Like, there was an Indian sketch guy who, like... painted his cross to look like the god Ganesh, who's like an elephant god, and tried to get hard on stage, and you know, like an elephant's trunk. And then the judge was like, yeah, a lot of people try to get hard on this stage at this show. None of them succeed.
Oh my god.
Pretty bad move, buddy.
Uh-huh.
There was a guy who did Frasier and was doing the theme song to Frasier, like the toss out and scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
I'm coming again. And then pissed on a cake and ate it.
Oh my god.
And then there was a woman with like a vibrator in her cooch that would like go off randomly.
That's that's good. Yeah, that's just good.
Yeah, it was a good But that's to me, it's like, that's like character work after dark.
Yes, that's
But I've seen a lot
hours.
Of just people who are like, hey, I like eat a whole Jell-O cake on stage. And that's my, and I'm trying to read like a poem at the same time.
Yeah, I think I'm Andy Kaufman, sort
yeah,
of.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah,
yeah, it's that, we had a bit of that where there would be like, there was this place in Chicago called The Crowd, and it was a theater that was in this converted loft apartment that they turned into a theater that it was like a room that sat 50 people.
Yeah.
It got shut down the week before the pandemic started because the city finally sent like somebody to go and like inspect it.
Yeah.
And they were like, how many people are you having in this place? And they're like, oh, you know, like 50 to 100 every night. They condemned the building.
It's
like, you guys are out of your minds. Yeah. It had a long, it was on the second floor up this long staircase, like walk up from the sidewalk, and the door opened inward. So it's like if there was ever a fire and 100 people all rushed down this one single lane staircase to a door that opens, like it was horrible. But they had this show called Midnight Night there, and it would be like improvised Deadliest Catch, where they brought a garden hose in and started spraying water at this girl's face while she tried to like do a scene, or just like a woman was just wearing a shirt made out of Cheerios, and you know, just all kinds of really fun stuff like that. My favorite thing to come out of that was there would be these gimmick improv teams, where it was two of them really made me chuckle. One was called Our Wives, an all Borat improv team.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, it was just four people dressed like Borat doing improv as Borat.
Yeah.
And the other one was called Courtside, and it was all Jack Nicholson improv team. So it was just a bunch of people. They had their little folding like chairs, like the courtside at the Laker games, and they were doing improv as old Jack Nicholson.
That rules.
Yeah, it was fun. Because you're a big Laker fan.
I'm a huge Laker fan. Yeah.
How are we feeling about their prospects?
Going forward?
Yeah.
I thought this was a good podcast.
I'm sorry.
I don't want to dive into negativity.
I'm very sorry.
I'm really worried that we're going to get Kyrie Irving. That's like a big frustration in my life, you know. Yeah. I thought that we might get him at the trade deadline, but it looked like the Brooklyn Nets didn't want to give him to like a contender. If we were a contender, which it turns out we like might have been.
Crazy.
But our salary cap is in a hellish mode. We got to sign Austin Reeves to a big contract. D'Lo looked cooked. Mm-hmm. You know, after two series and lost his shot, and if he loses his shot, he's got nothing. So I'm pretty worried. LeBron's older; he's gonna get foot surgery in the off season.
Oh shit!
Yeah, and AD is like really good, but wears down and can't be like the first option. So no. I'm pretty fucking worried.
Yeah,
but the nice thing is that everybody's worried about their team. Nobody's like a perennial favorite. The Warriors are going to get knocked off
because
they can't afford everybody. Phoenix looks like kind of a disaster zone, even though they have KD.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, we could get Damian Lillard and everything would be saved. He's like one of my favorite players of all time. So you know,
that'd be cool.
Maybe that would be cool. Yeah, huh.
Yeah, I never had an NBA team.
You're not a Bulls guy?
I like the Bulls. Yeah. I think if I had to pick, it would be the Bulls. Yeah. They're the only team I've seen live. I haven't been to a Laker or a Clippers, Jesus Christ, game since I moved here. Because there was no team in Missouri, so like as a kid, I kind of liked OKC because that was like also when like Kevin Durant and Westbrook and like that whole thing
James
was sort
Harden,
of going on. Yeah, and that was really cool and fun. But nowadays, you know, as a Chiefs fan, because I care about football way more than basketball, it's I feel like I'm living in a dream world.
Oh, yeah, you got the best player of maybe all time.
Yeah, I know.
If you can win a few more championships, you can take over Tom Brady as like the best player.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing the math in my head, and if he won every like he to pass Brady, he would have to win starting like next season. He would have to win so many Super Bowls in a row that he'd only be 35 by the time he passes Brady if he won every single year. So I'm like, I can see a little back to back here, a little 2 year drought here, and then one win here. Like, I can there is a path forward to where he gets to 8 Super Bowls, but that is a long way off, and I'm just enjoying the ride because I don't know how much you know about the Kansas City Chiefs history, but we were one of the worst, most dog shit teams for a very long time.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why I'm sort of feeling like this. None of this is real.
Yeah, that's great. I love Andy Reid.
Yeah,
I liked him
on
Philly. He's a walrus of a man.
He's amazing.
He's such a good coach.
Mm-hmm.
Mahomes really beefed it when the Bengals beat them, but besides that, it's like he's had a really good career.
I mean, that was...
I saw it happening because I was like, oh, he has nothing in the tank.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Bengals are going to be hard to beat.
The
Bills, if they could get over themselves,
are
going to be hard to beat.
See, I think the Bills window closes this year.
Oh, really?
If they don't do it this year, yeah. I think it's like...
Too many second-round exits?
Too many second-round exits, too much like... I think Josh Allen is going to start to break down because of his playing style.
Yeah.
Like, that's the same thing with Lamar Jackson. Like, I was like this whole contract controversy. It's like, yeah, he should have been paid way more than what they were gonna pay him. But I'm like, dude, you're a mobile quarterback entering like what your fifth or sixth season in the league. Like,
yeah, they never.
You didn't play a full season last year. Like, there's the writing's on the wall for guys that want to get out of the pocket like that.
Yeah,
and so I don't know. I think also the just culturally the Bills, like sadly, it's baked into their culture to just fucking tank it.
Yeah.
When there's a semblance of good, similar to how the Raiders have a culture of mediocrity that truly boggles the mind.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I love the Raiders when I was young. That was my team.
Yeah.
But they like biffed it so hard in the 2000s and the 2010s that it's like really hard for me to root them for them.
Mm-hmm.
And also they got like, ever since they moved to Vegas, they got players like, you know, kicked out of the league, suspended for online gambling,
killing
people in Teslas,
all
of this stuff. And that's hard to, you know.
That's hard to come back from.
Hard to support.
They also just, Jimmy Garoppolo failed his physical. Did you see that?
Oh, I couldn't imagine that.
So he might not be eligible to play if he doesn't pass it by the time like a certain like deadline passes or something. So,
yeah, that could be tough.
Yep. You know, you send all this shit out for a backup and who knows? Sports talk. That was fun.
Sports, I love sports talk.
So do I.
It's nice. It's community. Mm-hmm. It's good.
I was at a pool yesterday for, we're recording this the day after Memorial Day and I didn't forget, but I put the pool. Do you know the app Swimply? Are you familiar with it?
No, what's that?
It's Airbnb for pools.
Like just regular people's pools?
Yeah. You just, if you're a guy in Burbank that has a backyard pool that he's not using, you can put it up on this website and it's like, hey, $60 an hour, unlimited, like up to 10 guests, come swim in my pool. And that's what we did yesterday. And this guy had a big TV outside, so we were watching the Eastern Conference Finals.
Oh,
and,
yeah, Miami destroying Boston.
Yes, yeah. And it was very fun.
A great
fun.
Moment in sports history.
Yeah, that was the thing. We were talking because I don't hold a torch for either team, really. And so it was just this cool thing of, like, damn, well, if Boston wins, that's history. And damn, if Miami wins, that's history. Like, it's just good for sports fans. But there was, I still run into these people in my life sometimes, and it's fucking infuriating. There was a person who, like, the game was on the TV, and I was just kind of focusing on the game, and it was like a, sports ball.
Yeah.
I'm like, you are a disease.
You should be able to send those people to Gitmo.
Yeah, that would be.
Guantanamo Bay should have a wing just for sports ball people. If you don't get it, then that's fine, but shut the fuck up.
Right.
Like, you know, there's people trying to enjoy themselves.
Exactly.
I don't like anybody who tries to ruin a good time.
Hey, yeah. Your lips to his ears, sister.
Yeah.
I am also very anti, like, I just don't like yuck and yum in general.
Yeah.
You know what
really,
I mean?
Yeah, it really ruins my vibe.
Yeah, it's
unless
like,
you're hurting somebody or whatever,
right.
Then you can yuck somebody's yum and you can be like, hey, stop doing that. But if somebody's just like enjoying a TV and you're like, what a stupid show, go like, get fucked.
Yeah, I don't
lay down in a grave, I'll bury you.
Yeah, I don't need it. Thank you for that. Man, well, all that to say.
But it was a good game, especially because the Celtics lost.
It was a really fun game. I'm glad that, yeah, that was a fun. I do like this idea of, like, in the NBA, where I saw it today, it's like the fact that there are so many teams in smaller markets still from, like, the old days and whatnot.
Yeah.
Like, smaller, quote-unquote, markets. People are like, it feels like there's a panic on NBA Twitter at the idea of, like, a Denver playing Miami instead of, like, Boston playing LA.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fun, like, added ripple of drama to the whole experience.
Yeah, but Denver's a good team. They got a good, like, president of basketball operations. And nobody could have seen, if people saw Jokic coming, they would have drafted him earlier than, like, 47th.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if you develop a person like that,
yeah,
then, you know, you deserve to go to the finals.
Mm-hmm. I saw something the other day that was like, it was the starting lineup for, like, the East All-Star team in the past, like in like 2003 or something, versus the one from this year. And it's like, yeah, who would win? And it was like, my God, it was like fucking, you had Kevin Garnett and Allen Iverson.
Yeah.
It was like this murderer's row of fucking, like, Hall of Fame, like, bad motherfuckers.
The West was insane. It was like Tim Duncan, Dirk Nowitzki, Chris, what's his face on the Kings, and some other, like, powerhouse, like Pau Gasol or something like that. Yeah, so it's just, like, kind of just, like, the legends of legends.
That was a weird golden era that I don't think anyone realized was a golden era because it was post-MJ.
Yeah.
And so everyone was like, well, the whole league's in a rebuild now. But, I mean, fucking come on.
Yeah, I got a problem with the MJ stuff just because he won 6 championships, and that's, like, you know, goated for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But he also did it in the one era that was, like, ravaged by cocaine and drugs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, people just being bad and bad sports medicine, getting too much money too quickly for, like, people who weren't aware of what that meant. So it's
right,
you know, he was playing against, like, it was end of Magic, Bird, beginning of like this new generation of people who didn't know how to manage money.
Yeah, it was good timing.
It was great timing
for
him.
A lot of his success comes from great timing and competitiveness. Because like I always, I mean, maybe it's because of when I was born, but it's like I've always said, oh yeah, I love MJ. Like I grew up watching fucking Looney Tunes. Space Jam was like one of my favorite movies. But
still
I'm like,
holds up. Great jokes.
It does. It still holds up. Great jokes. Great cameos. Can't say the same for Space Jam, A New Legacy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but what I am saying is LeBron James is far and away a better basketball player than MJ. He's the most LeBron James might be the most impressive physical specimen of all time.
Yeah.
Like, he's a guy that's the size of a house that can move like a fucking gazelle. Like,
even when his foot doesn't freaking work, he averages like 27 points. It's like amazing his basketball IQ and what he can do on a court.
And he's almost 40. I'm listening to his audiobook right now. The book just came out about him. It's great. I didn't realize this was such a big part of his game, but they talked about, because I've seen that movie More Than a Game that they did about him and his high school team, but they go in depth about like his youth, like and like AAU career and stuff in the book. And what I didn't realize is what early on set him apart from everybody and made him like special right away before his body really grew was he's ambidextrous. And has like a savant like hand-eye coordination skill for like handling the ball and all this and taking shots and whatnot. And I didn't realize that.
Yeah, people were shitting on Jaylen Brown. This is sports talk.
Yes, that's right.
So people were shitting on Jaylen Brown for like not being able to dribble. And the same thing with Westbrook, because Westbrook has had like a lot of hand injuries. Mm-hmm. I think he broke his hand twice, and that's why he has such a fucked up form and has a bad like release on his jumper and why he can't dribble anymore.
Yeah.
But LeBron has maintained that ability to go quickly and still finish just because his dribble like is consistent and like low, but also he knows how to like carry the ball. Mm-hmm. I think he learned that a lot from like, you know, you're like you're a component of the people that you're around most. Mm-hmm. Dwayne Wade was the same way. Like, he had a way to dribble that was like unique, and he barely ever got it stolen. Kobe was the same way, where it's like you kind of learn from those guys how to get in the paint, and most people just don't. Jaylen Brown never learned that kind of skill of like just how to get around people and how to maintain your dribble quick.
Yeah, how to split double teams.
Yeah, how to like split double teams, how to not get it clawed out and people, you know, or make the right read.
Yeah.
Somebody's open.
Somebody's open. And we're also starting to see slowly but surely the rise of the big man again, which is something that's thrilling to me. Well, amidst the Steph Curry revolution also, I think there's going to be some interesting like roster matchups coming up here. Everybody's going to be going looking in Serbia for like a 7 foot tall kid. but all that to say, Where was your like hometown? Where did you grow up? Like,
so
where were you born?
I was born in Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
My dad had a company out there with his brother, but they had a bad relationship.
Okay, good.
And so that was not good for anybody. And after he like got bought out of the business, he moved to Lake Tahoe to get away from the world.
Nice.
And because he thought it would also be close to like. He had a lumber business, so like they had all the forests like in Northern California by this place called Altura. So he was like, I'll move to Nevada, I'll be in control of that.
Yeah.
And I'll do that like when I need to. And then I'm like kind of in a localized area. And then I spent a lot of time there as like a youth up until I was like 12 or 13. I moved down to Palm Springs because my dad got a job out there. And then I moved to Orange County afterwards and spent sophomore, junior, senior year of high school in Orange County.
Yeah.
A really horrible place. I don't recommend it to anybody.
I was going
to
say.
I love like three people there and everybody else could get fucked. It's a big mall.
Yeah.
It sucks ass.
Yeah.
I don't know why people like it, except that the beach is right there and there's like a lot of hot rich people.
Isn't it like Republican Central?
It's like, yeah, I think it's. It comes and goes depending on which area you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Southern Orange County is very, like, wealthy and a lot of, like, white guys who, you know, own a boat.
Yeah.
And that's, like, a dangerous person to be around politically. Yes. And then Northern Orange County is, like, a lot of, like, Mexican people who wanted to move away from, like, L.A.
Gotcha.
And start, like, a suburban life.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's really nice. But the whole place can get fucked. I really hate it.
Okay, amazing. So, elementary school, We're talking like kindergarten through fourth grade. What type of kid were you? Or did you have what, like, what genre? Were you like a sporty kid? Were you kind of a dork? Like, what was going on?
I think
on?
I was just like a smart kid who was like very family oriented.
Oh,
yeah,
that's lovely.
Yeah, it's really sweet.
Yeah,
I was a sweet kid.
Mm-hmm.
Sue me.
Yeah, I'll
see you in court.
You'll find no issues here, my friend. I wore Winnie the Pooh overalls until middle school.
Oh yeah, like, there's a picture of me. I had like bad eczema too, so it was like I was just kind of like,
mm-hmm.
I have like this pajama set that's like all ski and snowboard equipment.
Adorable.
Yeah, my sister told a story like the other week that I would just get naked randomly and kind of run around.
Oh,
I think I was like a weird freaky kid.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah,
there's a bit of chaos in there.
Yeah, a little chaos in there. Yeah.
How would your teachers describe you?
Probably just like a quiet, smart kid.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you good grades.
Yeah, good
grades.
Didn't
ruffle any feathers.
No, I didn't ruffle any feathers.
That's interesting. I was similar, but did you find, around what time did you discover that you were funny?
Oh, like 3 days ago.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. When did I discover I was funny? I was always like, I always liked, my favorite thing to do was to watch The Daily Show.
Okay.
Especially when I got like 10, 12 years old, I didn't know exactly what it was, but Jon Stewart really made me laugh because
mm-hmm.
he's like a strange person because he like tells the news or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But also he's like remarkably funny and talented and clever and like honest and kind of brutal and stuff like that. And he made like a lot of, you know, dick jokes.
Yeah.
Even though he's like a news reporter. And I thought that was like so funny that you can be like a smart guy, but also like, you know, a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
And then like I watched a lot of like Bugs Bunny cartoons. He's a huge influence.
Amazing.
And like I like remember trying to write a SpongeBob script when I was like 9 or 10. I was like, they have to, I know that they do something to like write it out.
Uh-huh.
And so I spent like a little bit of time trying to work it out.
Yeah.
Then gave up on it because it was too hard.
Shit.
Yeah. And then like kind of high school, I was like, you know, had a good group of friends that I was like, you know, trying to make laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And then also like, I don't know, Comedy Central was different because they would like show like comedy specials.
Yeah.
And I would like watch the Mitch Hedberg special like all the time when it was on.
Okay. Yeah. That's, would you say who are like your top influences other than Bugs Bunny?
Yeah. Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah. You know. I see a lot
Mitch
of that.
Hedberg, Jon Stewart. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like Louis a lot,
yeah.
But I always thought he did like ugly comedy
because
mm-hmm. he's like kind of more brutal and like honest than I ever wanted to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care about, you know,
that
upsetting
stuff.
People that much.
Right.
He has a very big, like, that's like my whole groove is I want to upset people and then get people like to be on board and laugh and that kind of discontent.
Yeah.
I don't care about that. I just want people to have a good time.
Yeah. See, that's your sweet boy.
Yeah, I'm a
ultimately.
Sweetie pie. Yeah.
That's
I don't like kind of there's like a unlikability to a certain amount of comedy that I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And it really like is not a good sell for me, although I think it's a good sell for like people who are, you know, not me.
Yeah. I don't know. I never go out to divide the room. Like, that's not ever like a goal of mine to like get people to like gasp, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
you go like, what the fuck?
Right. At least with the material, with the presentation, that is how I found that sometimes I quickly realize when a room is I'm not for them because the screaming and the running around and all of that. Some people get freaked out by it. But some people, it's shocking sometimes after like a show you'll be milling about and like old people love me.
Yeah.
Like old people will come up and be like, oh, you were so fun.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
like, did you hear what I was doing up there? Like, I thought I would scare you, but that's neat.
Yeah. I think also some people aren't in it for jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And also, so you know, I know I'm dead when an audience isn't, like, paying attention, so I do a few things up top to make sure they're, like, paying attention a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's, like, my number one worry before I get up on stage. It's just, like, make people engaged.
Mm-hmm.
But also, people aren't, like, I think audiences are smarter than you would give them credit for, but they're not, like, aware enough to be like, oh, that's like a good joke.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like in it for reaction.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something. I think the comedy IQ of the nation has just risen a lot lately, where it's like people just have an appreciation for a night out, and yep. like the rhythm of a laughing room is appealing to be a part of in a lot of places, especially in like a packed space, you know, like in the OR, whenever it's like sold out, it's like,
yeah, wow.
Like if I don't laugh, I feel like I'm in trouble or something. Which I love, but, would you say, so like, let's move on middle school. For middle school, Alex, we're talking puberty's coming, hitting you like a brick truck.
Oh, puberty hit me at like 17 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like 5'3 until like 17. Yeah.
Really? So you hit like a real late growth spurt?
I hit a real late growth spurt.
Interesting.
And since this is a podcast, I am 6'2 now.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
towers over me.
But, yeah, I think I was just kind of the same. I don't think I changed all that much. Did you feel like a change in yourself at a certain point?
I felt the only change that happened for me between, like, elementary school to, like, middle school, so, like, fourth grade, let's say, to, like, seventh grade, was I felt an expectation of those around me to act differently because they were. But internally, I was still going home and playing with action figures like still being very much like childlike in my home life. Whereas whenever I would get to school, I'd be like, of course I know about sex.
Don't be
so stupid. I watched The Matrix.
There
was a performative aspect of it, you know. But internally, I was very like boyish. I didn't stop trick-or-treating until I was a senior in high school.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it was. Well, which also, to be fair to me, for those of you that just cringed, is when I got to high school, our theater department, which you're still cringing now, I can still feel it, they would do like a can drive every Halloween, where it's like Halloween night, the theater kids all dress up and go out, and it's like, hey, we're trick-or-treating for canned goods, for UNICEF or whatever, but also... I mean, you got the candy right there. So
we
were just a band of high schoolers trick-or-treating. But so did you play any sports or anything like that?
Yeah, I played like high school basketball.
Okay.
There was a kid. I played that in Palm Springs for my freshman year. And then I kind of fell off a little bit, like starting at a new school and stuff.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to do anything and I was just kind of depressed.
Yeah.
As a sophomore and junior. Yeah, there was a kid who had a bunch of tattoos at this Catholic school called Xavier in Palm Springs, California.
Oh, sure.
And they made him like, he had like bandages over all the like neck tattoos and then like a big arm sleeve and had to wear like leggings because they couldn't have like a 14-year-old with a bunch of tattoos like playing on the team.
God, no.
Yeah, that would be upsetting to God or whatever.
Yes, exactly.
But he left the school because he knocked up somebody when he was like 13 or 14.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And was then kind of like Dennis ran Rodman? Away.
Yeah, he was Dennis Rodman. yeah, that was kind of crazy, a crazy event. But I always felt like very out of place because they were like, oh, you aren't having sex? And I was like, I'm not even thinking about it.
Right.
Like there would be people who are like way too developed. Like there was this girl who got suspended because there was somebody sucking on her titties at the movie theater.
Oh, no.
And they got caught and she was suspended for like 2 weeks.
From school? From the
school,
activity
yeah.
based at a movie theater?
Yeah.
Well, Catholic school,
yeah,
right?
Catholics, yeah, because it doesn't, like, reflect well on the institution.
No, it's...
Yeah.
Wow.
And she, yeah. It was, like, a lot of, like... I think there's, like, a lot of weird, like, hypersexuality in, like, kids. And I wasn't, like... I wasn't thinking about it, like, mentally. I wasn't, like... I was not developing enough to, like, really think about it. Some people, like, develop early. I'm a late bloomer with everything.
Yeah. I can definitely relate.
Yeah. Where I think I'm, like, good in relationships, but even then it's, like, it took a lot of time to feel.
Yeah.
Like, I have, I don't know if you feel this way, but I feel like I have to have, like, a knowledge about something before I actually, like, put a lot of, like, intuition into it,
okay.
or like, you know, really pursue it.
So would you say you like to plan ahead?
Yeah,
you're
like
a planner.
I like a plan.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like to figure out what I'm going to do before I'm going to do it.
The ins and the outs, yeah. Yes. I will go as far as to, if I know I'm going on a date the next night with someone, I will drive by the place where we've scheduled the date
to
scope out the parking and to scope out, like, just the general area and stuff that. Like, I go overboard sometimes.
Yeah, I'm like a guy in a heist. I'm like, okay, that camera's pointing this way. There's laser beams here.
Yeah.
And I got to make sure that I know everything that's going into it. But yeah. I become a little bit more, you know, relaxed just because it's like you have this whole knowledge of stuff as you get later in life. I'm 30.
True.
I'm not old, but
right.
I also feel like I'm 72 at all times.
Yeah. Today I was talking to someone and I was like, I have felt like I have felt and presented as a 30-year-old since I was 12. And I'm 28 now, so I'm almost to the promised land. I'm almost to the age that I was always meant to be. I was the kid that would, like, at barbecues, all the other kids would be, like, throwing balloons at each other and pissing in each other's face or whatever whatever kids do. And I would, like, saunter over to the parent circle with my hands in my pockets and be like, how's work? It's like I was obsessed with having a job. And that came from SpongeBob.
SpongeBob
made me obsessed with having a job because I thought, Jesus Christ, this guy's leaping out of bed, sprinting to work, chanting to himself. Like, it must be the coolest thing in the world to have a job.
Yeah, I got that. I also felt like it was like a reflection of other people because I wasn't like a – I had like a rolling backpack for a second, but there was there was another kid because I was like 5 feet tall and the backpack was huge. And my parents were like, you're not going to go to school. I'm going to get you a rolling backpack.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I saw the kid at school with a rolling backpack also, and he was like this bow tie kid. You know how they have like bow tie kids?
Yep.
And I was like, all right, fuck this. I'm getting a fucking back. I don't want to be this fucking dweeb.
Yeah.
He was like you know, those like kids who are like Republicans at like 13 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like wear a tiny suit.
Yeah.
Bow tie.
Talking
you know,
taxes.
Talking about taxes.
Yeah.
And because their dad is like divorced and like a dweeb himself. Yeah. He was one of those. And I was just like, I'm like a big, like, what's going on in around me?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be like that. I want to be more like this.
Yes.
And maybe people will perceive me how I want to be perceived, but it's going to take some time.
Yeah. I had a good gauge for that where I was like, okay, I like anime, but there are kids who come to school with Naruto headbands on.
Yeah.
And then there are other kids who come to school wearing Nike Shocks.
Yeah.
I will be, as for me and my house, we will buy Nikes. That's where I landed on it.
Yeah. But, I also like anime. I keep a little bit of it subdued just because if people find that shit out about you, they're like, oh, I think I know everything about you.
Yeah. No.
It's just like,
it's a wide net.
I got a lot of paradoxes about my life, you know? Also, it's like the same thing. Like, we were because our mutual friend is like a porn star, and like a big one too, and has had like a very successful career.
Yeah, she's done this podcast twice.
Oh, she's done it twice. Yeah. Yeah, April's great. But that's like a very funny thing for me to, and I'm sure it's like for you too.
Yes.
It's just like I am this person, but also I've had all of these experiences that are like so divergent from what people would try to do.
Yeah.
And some people's like fantasies also, just like hanging out with a porn star or whatever.
Right.
To me, it's just like I know I'm myself, so it's like these are just kind of like activities that I do that are very funny.
Yeah.
To me internally.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, for other people, it's just like, oh, wow, I can't believe that.
Right. Anytime, like, I was at a party with some pornography people there, and they're like, we're going to go do this thing, thing that I won't say on mic. You have to come. And I was like, oh, no. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
It's like, no. I'm quite fine going home and watching Better Call Saul. I don't need to.
A great show.
there are questions I don't need answered about myself.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
A lot of people in comedy especially are like addicts to events.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not that way.
No.
It would probably be more helpful to like the career,
yeah.
you know, but I just like, I want to do my own thing.
Yeah.
It's like,
I pretty much hate talking to most comics after shows. There's a handful that like I'll enjoy, but so many people rub me the wrong way. And the people that rub me the wrong way are people that will never like sort of get out of the place that they're at right now.
Yeah, you know.
It's like that is a thing, and I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's rarely is it somebody who's like successful that's the asshole. It's almost always somebody who's the same age as the successful person but is still at your level that is bitter.
Yeah.
And that is a part of it that I didn't realize I was signing up for.
Oh, sure. There's this person who wanted to get a job at the Comedy Store and was like texting me about it.
Mm.
And I thought we were friendly, so I gave her like some information about how to do it. And I didn't give her anything that was like wrong or whatever.
Right.
But it's really hard for me to recommend people because I like really don't want to. And yeah. I have an obligation to like, you know, if I put my, you know, self out there, then they have to be like, you know, aware that I'm putting myself out there.
Yeah.
And bring a certain type of expertise or whatever to it. Mm-hmm. But I found out later she like tweeted about me and Jesus made Christ. This whole thing, you know.
Yeah.
And was like, you know, calling me a gatekeeper and all of these things.
Uh-huh.
But it's like, I am a gatekeeper. I am a gatekeeper to myself and my like kind of reputation in the eyes of the people that I value. Mm-hmm. But the idea that it's like, oh, you just want to kind of throw away a relationship. And she also, like, I saw her in person and she iced me out.
Yeah.
You want to like throw out away a relationship because I just didn't get you the thing that you wanted. That's like incredibly selfish and self-serving to me.
Yeah.
And I really don't like that. So that's also why I keep kind of like, just because it's like, I don't think I'm like famous.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that people know who I am enough. And that even upsets me too. The fact that people know who I am.
Yeah.
Is just really
immensely.
I want to be a comedian. I want to do the things. I just want to be alone at the end of the day, kind of.
That's a beautiful way of putting it. And also, I think that mentality makes you perfect for that job.
Yeah.
Because for those of you that didn't read the description or are living under a rock, Alex works as a door guy at the Comedy Store, which is a very coveted position. And
a lot of people want it.
A lot of people want it. And it's one of those things where you don't want somebody who's like an over the top sort of people pleaser like in that role, because it's how fucking often is it just you just see people like looking at you like, please give me the secret, give me the secret.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
what do I need, what I'll
tell you the secret. But I feel like people are just not listening to me, or they're not aware, or they're not equipped to do it.
Yeah,
where it's like, the secret is you get to know people and you're sweet and you're very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole secret. There's nothing more than that.
No, there has to be something.
You have good relationships with people and they give you stuff if you ask for it.
Yep.
If the relationship is good enough.
Yep.
That's the entire fucking secret. It's like so easy. So many people don't get it.
And so many people, that's terrifying to hear because they are neither sweet nor funny.
Yeah.
Nor like.
You also have to be like, I don't, you've seen me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, you know, I'm a capable enough. I don't think that I'm like Bill Burr.
Yeah.
Because I think that he's like an insane talent.
Mm-hmm.
I do think I'm equipped to kill in a room.
Yes, and I would say
if you don't feel like you're equipped to kill in a room, then it's like, oh, why are you talking to me? You still have like a lot of steps.
Yes.
To get into before you try to do something on a massive level.
Yeah. So many people want to skip the line. And that's kind of like what we were talking about earlier with the clips.
It's incredibly hard to skip the line.
Uh-huh.
And people do it. And also they make fun of like there's this comic who like was posting Instagram videos.
Mm-hmm.
And people quickly found out that he was like putting a laugh track in and that they were filmed in his apartment. I think we've talked about that.
I think we have, yeah.
Yeah, a certain comic. You never know who's watching. Andrew mm-hmm. Santino came up to me and was like, hey, this comic, have you seen this comic?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, in his room alone, and there's like a laugh track underneath.
Yeah.
And I was like, this comic has been shared in so many group chats that I'm in.
Yeah.
Because people just know. Like, if you want to skip the line, you have to be aware that people are aware that you're trying to skip the line.
Uh-huh. And that is a quick way to never succeeding even a little bit.
Alienate a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a frustrating thing because, like I said, I very much enjoy doing things the right way, or like the traditional way. Like I love that there's a system in place that is like kind of meant to not be figured out, like at the at a place like the store, where it's like you have to, it's not something that you can just sign up for. It's like you have to kind of get a sense of things, like learn this like kind of secret language or whatever. And it's like, because in Chicago, I worked at Second City, which is like
a very institutionalized place.
So people, I had a similar experience with like people being like, but how do I, and how can I, and can I skip the, and whatever. And it's like anybody who, it always felt so like smarmy and like so.
Well, one, I'm the wrong person to ask because I don't have any actual control in like who gets, you know, something.
Yeah.
But also it's like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
I've been here a long time and I'm just getting this.
Right. Yeah. There's people
need to help out anybody.
But ultimately what people come to is, but it's me.
Yeah.
Come on, man. It's me we're talking about here. Yeah. A guy you've met twice. Like there's a grossness about it, and a grossness. There's such a grossness around the idea of networking and that sort of stuff. But also there can be a beautiful side to it. And that side is genuinely becoming someone's friend because you have a shared interest, you know? Yeah.
Or like thinking that you're like, I always wanted to be friends with people who I like and who are like charming and stuff.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, oh, okay. You're like fun and charming.
Yeah.
And I think I'm like a decent enough guy. So like, what are you all about? And I like to figure out what they're all about and what that actually makes them tick.
Yeah.
I come into that with that mentality.
Yeah.
If you're coming into like, how can I get stuff out of you? That's like a very weird place to come from.
Extremely.
Because you also can't get anything from them. They have like a prior list of people in their mind from years of doing this.
Mm-hmm.
They had got no time for like a new person to just kind of like come up and not give them anything. It's like, I hate transactional relationships, but every relationship is semi-transactional in the way that you like have to find some value in the other person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really upsets me. Also, I was very lucky when I got the job. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not like a huge comic.
Story? Like, how did it come about for you?
So I started, and if you want to take this advice, it doesn't work because the basketball league doesn't run anymore.
Yeah.
But I was playing Tuesdays with some of the door guys,
mm-hmm.
and two people got fired, or one person left because he didn't want to take out trash, and then another person was leaving because they like got a writing job. This guy Stephen Randolph, who I think is very funny, just had a baby. But so the two people left the store and they were looking for new people to, you know, hire. And I was playing in a basketball game with all of these door guys. And so they were like, gave me a really nice spot on Pollock. And the guy, Adam Egan, who was a booker at the time, now runs Joe Rogan's Mothership Club, or the booking for that. He like was laughing in the back. And I didn't think that I had a great set, but I heard Adam laughing.
Yeah. Damn.
And it was like really, you know, trying to push a lot of jokes. Like it was a half full audience. I was like not expecting anything. Mm-hmm. But then one of the door guys was like, hey, Adam really liked your set. Do you want to come talk to him? And I was like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, buddy, I really liked your stuff. Like, do you want a job here? And I was like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work like that anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
I've heard it's a different system.
It's a whole different system.
Yeah.
There's more like weeding out auditions, post-audition type of stuff. They want to see how you respond and act over like a course of time. And so I was like incredibly lucky that it was like a fortunate set. The guy liked me and that I was like, I had been doing comedy like 8 years at that point.
Yeah.
So I kind of knew the structure of it and how to do it. And I learned a lot on the job of like how to be a better comic.
Because
I was like actually getting, you know, meaningful stage time.
Right.
Which in LA didn't exist for a long time for me.
Yeah. That's interesting that the game of basketball.
The game of basketball helped me out.
That's what got you to this. Yeah. That's amazing.
But it's like, yeah, that's the whole thing. It's like Gary Shandling used to have a basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah Silverman got her role because she was just like hanging out at the basketball game.
Yeah.
On the Gary Sanders show.
Yeah.
The Larry Sanders show.
Yeah. God, that's wild. I mean, and just to have like a, I don't know. Yeah, to have that classic, like, it's the fucking book we've all read. Like, the booker in the back of the comedy store laughed and shook my hand and changed my life. Like, whole thing is really, that's a very cool story. I've been hanging around Potluck a little bit here and there, and I didn't realize that there are nights where it's, like, a dead, like, the audience is, one's there. Because the one time I've done Potluck, it was packed. Like, it wasn't like a trickle in, like, doors open and it just the fucking room filled, and I was like, rocking and rolling, here we go. Like, this place is electric. And then, like, I think I went 2 weeks ago or something, sometime
Lakers
recently
game was on.
That was when there was a Laker game on and it was fucking dead. I'm like, oh boy, this is a much harder test here.
Yeah, and you have to, like, but you also have to make them laugh too. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah that's what's hard about, you know, stand up.
Yeah,
you gotta be prepared to do anything that you can do in a room that doesn't like you.
Ain't it the truth? Yeah. Speaking of rooms that don't like you, circling back around to Alex's life story, high school. Let's just a little touch on high school. Did you do any sort of, like, performing? Like, were you in any plays or debate or anything like that?
Yeah, I was in debate club. I have this horrible memory of me lying during a debate about something, and then everybody just being like, what the fuck is this kid all about? And then me being like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. I can't find the note card that I was lying about.
Oh,
yeah, it was really bad.
That was the end of that career.
Yeah, that was the end of that. I was just, like, really, you know, defeated.
Mm-hmm.
And my debate partner was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I don't think he thinks about it, but I certainly do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like debate, mm-hmm. but I wasn't, like, a performance guy. I didn't, like, it's the same thing. I don't want to be, like, known.
Yeah.
Or have to have, like, a take on something.
That's such a refreshing perspective.
We've
got too many takes these days.
We got too many takes.
Yeah.
There's, like, certain things that I feel passionate about,
uh-huh.
but I don't want to, I don't need to be Stephen A. Smith. I don't need to be freaking Kendrick Perkins. I like Zach Lowe more than I like any of those guys, because mm-hmm. he's like, this is kind of what a team needs to work on, you know?
Yeah.
That's, like, what I value.
Interesting.
In commentary.
Yeah. My favorite sports media personality is Pat McAfee.
Oh, yeah, I like Pat.
I like how, to this day, he consistently is, like, with every hot take that he spits out of his mouth, he just fucking peppers it with, and I'm an idiot, and I'm stupid, and I don't know how shit works, just looking at it from my perspective, here's how I feel.
Yeah, I like all the wonks. I like Kirk Goldsberry when he was writing for Grantland.
Mm-hmm.
I like Zach Lowe. I like Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons.
I don't like any of the other Ringer guys.
Okay. Because
they're just too, like, I don't know. They don't have any personality behind it.
Yeah.
But, I like a wonky guy who has, like, a lot of, like, he spends too much time, like, delving into the minutia of, like, you know, the analytics of NFL linebackers.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, those people are insane.
Mm-hmm.
And I like an insane guy to tell me a sports story.
Yeah.
That isn't just like, oh, I'm making this up.
It's right.
Like, I've worked on this. Like, I like Daryl Morey on a podcast because he's like, we've spent 1,000 man hours just totally, like, ranking everybody in the NBA
mm-hmm.
and what their contract should be.
Yeah.
I like that guy.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
An analytics guy.
I like an analytics guy.
You'd be a good YouTuber.
No.
YouTube's all about analytics.
Yeah, I know, but I don't have the voice for it.
Fair enough.
Well, what's up, YouTube?
What's up, everybody? Today we're going to be...
like and subscribe.
Put some, see, that was really good. Did you go to college?
I went to University of Washington.
Okay, how was that?
In Seattle. It was really good.
Yeah?
I was a bad student.
Oh, really? For the first time in your life, it sounds like.
Yeah, I was also like, in high school, I kind of waned.
Mm-hmm.
I have this thing called Crohn's disease, mm-hmm. and that perks up when you go through puberty.
Okay.
Of, like, the symptoms and stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of the fatigue.
Yeah.
And I was addicted to World of Warcraft again. And so I was up till, like, 2 o'clock in the morning and then waking up at 7 and then, like, dehydrated and not getting enough, like, nutrients because of the Crohn's.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, eh.
I can't do
and
this.
And so I was, like, a kind of A-minus, B-plus student for high school. And then in college, I was just like, I'm not doing any of this
Nothing.
Shit.
What was your major?
I started out in computer science because I thought I wanted to get into, like, video game development.
Yeah.
And then I was like, no, I don't want to. I don't want to be in front of a computer 8 hours a day. That sounds like no fun. Then I went to architecture because I was like, a thought that I had that I'm like, oh, I can design stuff. It'd be very fun to be like a artist. And then I was like, I discovered stand up like halfway through that degree path. And my teachers got mad at me because I was like not really paying attention to anything.
Oh.
And also they were like the most pompous, pretentious fucking dickheads in the world.
Architecture professors?
Yeah, architecture professors, yeah. Yeah, they sucked. They were just no fun to be around. And then I went into, just because I had all the credits for it and then I can graduate early, I went into art just because it's like easy, clean out. Yeah. I didn't want to spend any more money.
Mm-hmm.
I already spent too much money. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good for you, getting out of there. You figure, what job, so whenever you came down to LA, what, and like, you moved here in like 2014, you said?
Yeah.
Around then. What job did you have, like job did you get down here before the Comedy Store?
I was a Postmate for a while. I worked for Ranker.com, which is like a social media website. Mm-hmm. And I was like a freelance kind of person for them for like 3 years.
Yeah.
And so that was like the main job.
Mm-hmm.
I nannied for my sister at first and then some other people after that.
Wow, a male, that's a rare.
A male nanny, a manny.
You do have a calming, like, like I would be comfortable with you with my children.
Yeah. 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 I remember going on this like job interview and this woman was like, I was a little bit too nervous
because
I also like, it was around the same time, like I left the social media company, but I needed a job before I started the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
Or before I got like the call to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, hey, this is a little bit like, you haven't done this in a while. You're like nervous. And I was just like, yeah, I kind of don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And that was like, all right.
Huh.
Yeah, because it's also like you've had jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your first job?
My first job was I worked as a day laborer on a ranch.
Yeah. So if like they were like, there's not a lot of ranches in Glendale.
Uh-huh.
But if somebody was like, hey, I have this like opportunity to interview for a ranch hand, would you like want to go in and interview? And then I'm sure if you're like in the interview and you like got to there, you'd just be like, hey, I've done this before and I don't really want to do it again. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the same thing for me. I was like, I know I can do this, but it really doesn't seem like a good thing. I'm going to be checked out the entire time.
I put this part of myself behind me.
Yeah.
Like this is that's not who I am anymore. Yeah.
I've lived this life and I know everything that there is to do here. So I'm just going to like kind of,
yeah. Damn.
Yeah.
Well, that's what would you say is,
there's
like
a little bit of self-defeating nature in me.
Okay.
Which is not great, but also like, yeah.
Yeah, what would you say is like, so you get the job at the store and what makes me ask this question is, you said one of the guys quit because he didn't want to take out trash. What's like an aspect of the job that you had no idea that was going to be a thing? Like that you had to learn by doing, basically.
Comedians fucking hating my guts.
Oh, shit.
There's just a lot of people who have, like, a kind of inherent rudeness to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, if I'm telling you to do something, I don't know why you're trying to, like, fight with me on it.
Yeah.
It's like, I wouldn't be, I don't care that much.
Yeah.
So if I'm doing, you know, if I'm telling you to do something, it's like, I really, like, I don't want to do it. And I'm sorry that I have to do it, but you got to do it because I got no other recourse.
Yeah.
Because my boss or some like big comic is telling me that I need to do this.
Yes.
But yeah. And then customers being rude to you.
Mm.
It's like any customer service.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah. That's a big barrel of laughs.
Yeah. Do you have to answer the phones ever?
Every once in a while.
Yeah. Answering the phones for Second City, it goes like this. It's, regular call, regular call, regular call. One person picks up, hello? And they go, hi. Everyone in my hometown tells me I'm like the next Kevin Hart. Can I come to your place and talk to Lorne Michaels?
Yeah.
We get a lot of that.
Yeah, some people will come up to me and was like, hey, do you know where Emily LaFord is? Or Emily? Got that. Do you know where Emily is?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be like, no.
Yeah.
No, I don't really know who that person is.
Who is that?
You actually don't have to cut it. Everybody knows. It's like
yeah.
enough of a thing. but and I'll be like, eh, I don't really know about this. And they'll be like, okay. And then they'll be like, call up and be like, hey, do you know how I can get in touch with a booker? And I was like, yeah, just give a call back. Like tomorrow she'll probably be in. She's at a, you know, the office today.
Yeah.
And just kind of like throw the can down to the street. Yeah, to the next person.
Need an email inbox, info@comedystore.com.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, that's the one?
That is the one.
I feel like I see that on the website. Anyway, yeah, my relationship with that place is I love it a lot. I think it's really cool. I'm a big comedy nerd in it for the history of it. And yeah. I am so fucking on edge every time I go there because I do not want to be that person that one of y'all has to come over and be like, hey, you can't stand there.
Yeah.
Hey, you can't be like, because there are so many little... little rules.
There's a lot of little, yeah. There's a lot of.
I just always want to be doing it right, so I'm always like over, like stressing.
Yeah, those
about,
are the
like,
best people that come in.
yeah,
you're actually because I actually I like you.
Yeah, so that's nice. Know,
yeah, it's also one of those things where it's like if I like you, then it's like it makes it easier to be like, hey, this is how you should be doing it.
Right.
And this is, you know, makes it easier for everybody else.
Yeah.
And also like everybody there's, you know, okay enough that you can be like, hey, what's the deal with this? And they'll probably give you a straight answer.
Yeah.
But it didn't used to be like that, and it used to be a lot scarier.
That's what
there
I've heard.
A lot of, like, really dark people there.
Mm-hmm.
And the old booker, like, the guy before Adam used to be, like, a racist kind of, like,
I've
weird
heard
guy.
Stuff, yeah.
Now it's kind of different. I didn't hang out at the store like that before I started working there. So. Okay. It's kind of like changed my outlook on it because I feel comfortable there. But
people have said that it's gone through like a lot of evolutions recently where it was like that guy that was pre-Adam and then Adam and then now post-pandemic. Like it's like the three totally different vibes shifts in like a 20-year period basically. Yeah,
huge vibe shifts.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Adam made it like a million-dollar business again or, like, a multi-million-dollar business again.
Yeah.
Because he got, like, Rogan and D'Elia and all of these people to, like, view it as a cool club that they could take people to.
Mm-hmm.
And then D'Elia's a pedophile.
Right.
If you didn't hear.
Yeah, no, I've
the grapevine. And so, you know, he got asked to not be there as much or at all. And
as much.
And you know, and Rogan has this club and... in Austin, and is like a stadium guy now.
Right.
So he, you know, isn't there.
Yeah.
So it's like really changed kind of like the profile of the place. Because when it was Rogan and D'Elia, they were like huge comics at the time. And so like, you know, you cater to them and it was their experience and they would always sell out because they had huge draws. And now it's like shifted into more like not alti, but semi like professional killers of like Marin and Eliza. Sebastian's still a huge comic, but he's like, you know, a presence there. Greg Fitzsimmons, all of these guys who are like, you know, Eric Griffin, all these guys who are like built for comedy.
Yeah.
And Neil Brennan, of course.
Mm. Love Neil.
Yeah. And then Burr will pop in and it's just like immediately a sellout show.
Yeah.
It's like he's the biggest comic. He's like the comic everybody wants to see.
Yeah. He came and he did a show at the Haha that I got to open for him at.
Oh, that's
and
sick.
That was like one of the coolest like experiences up to date for my life because it was also because like I also got to do a show where I opened the show and it was Kevin Hart was headlining at the Haha when he was building this new hour that he just shot or whatever. Yeah. And both experiences were great, but different. And it's like, you know, Kevin, he rolls with a huge posse. He had his like wife with him, all his friends, like it was security guards, all this stuff. Like there wasn't much access to him, but he was really cool as he was leaving. He like, we like exchanged a few words and he was really nice to me and that was a really positive experience, but it was like kind of talking to Elvis. It was he was being shuttled off to his face. Bill, complete opposite. He shows up, he just pulls his car up to the door, steps out all by himself. He's like, how's it going? And he just like goes into the green room and he and I just sat there and he talked to me for like 20 minutes.
Oh, that's great.
It was like him being like, he told this like long joke story. He was like, I heard this thing the other day. It was fucking hilarious. And he just starts talking to me. And I'm like, both positive experiences with very famous people,
but just different.
And so, yeah. And then there's like some semi-famous people that come through, and it's one of the, some of the worst experiences I've ever had in my entire life with another human being. But those people will remain nameless.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My God. Well, we always end the show the same way, and we are approaching the end here, I do believe. I always ask the guest. We've talked a little bit about your life. We've talked about a little bit about your career, all these things.
Are we going to talk about death?
We are going to talk about death, religion, and sex right now. This is the lightning round. No, we talk about none of these things.
Oh, you're a Pete Holmes strike a guy.
Exactly.
Guy.
This is.
You know, do you do mushrooms and then kind of like laugh too loud in your wife's face? What's going on?
I what I'm about to do is something that I kind of stole from Pete Holmes, because I was a big fan of You Made It Weird when I was in college.
Too.
It was my first podcast that I started listening to.
Yeah, it rules.
And
back then, it really ruled.
Yeah, and then here's the thing. I love Pete to death still.
I saw him like a few days ago. He was fucking murdering.
Yeah, he lives in Ojai now.
Yeah, he lives in Ojai.
So
yeah.
I think it's a little more special for him when he makes it down these days. But very sweet man. I've met him a couple times and he's amazing. But the podcast did completely change when he got like way into like the
new Christianity and kind of the absence of alcohol.
Yes.
Yeah, it's sobriety.
Yeah, and I was like, I liked kind of like a more like cracking. Like my favorite episode ever of maybe any podcast is when he interviewed Keegan-Michael Key. From Key and Peele, and there's like a 45-minute chunk where they are just bipping and bopping back and
bits,
forth the
bits,
whole time.
Bits, yeah. Bits.
But what I'm stealing from him is his like big last question, and he usually asks, "What's the hardest time you've ever laughed?" What I'm asking is, if you could go back in time to any point in your entire life, as where it's like it's as if you rip a hole in the space-time continuum and stick your 30-year-old current you head through it to a time in your life where you were your most lost, your most like directionless. It's like you're walking up a mountain and something blew the map out of your hand.
If you
could go back in time to that Alex and give him just a piece of advice, like a concise like statement or something to motivate him to keep going, what would you say?
Interesting, because I've had a few of these.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because you were in Springfield,
and
I'm sure you felt kind of like trapped in the town.
Very much.
I always felt like I was trapped in the places that I like, and I did the best that I could in those places, but I was like a kid.
Yeah.
There's a lot more freedom to living in Los Angeles. People shit on this town, but there's a lot of stuff to do.
I love
and
it.
A lot of people to meet, and a lot of good food.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, when I was like out of college and like still living with my parents, I would just rip a hole and just be like, hey, you can get out of here and just get a job and stuff and figure yourself out for like the year that you took off where you weren't doing like that much comedy and kind of working on yourself and your mentality. You can do that, but you can also kind of work on comedy a little bit more.
Don't be afraid to try.
Yeah, don't be afraid to try.
Yeah.
'Cause I put a lot of years into stand-up, and there was like a few years where I was like really not trying, and I would have just been like, hey, you gotta work on yourself and get a better kind of outlook and disposition on life, and meet people, try to have a good time, try not to be so depressed.
It's not against the law.
It's not against the law. Yeah, to have a little bit of fun outside of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. All right, well, thanks for doing the show. Very much appreciate it. Is there anything, would you like to tell people where they can find you online or any shows you have coming up? This will air Thursday, so 2 days from now.
Yeah, I perform like 3 times a week at the Comedy Store. Catch me there. We can hang out, grab a drink. I'm on every social media platform as AlexHanna_good, except for TikTok, because I do not believe in them.
Perfect.
Yeah. Well, do you have any shout-outs?
I'd like
to... This is one thing. If you take anything from this interview, watch Riff Raff on Sway in the Morning Freestyle. It's the first one that pops up. It's the most beautiful piece of comedy that's ever been freestyled.
That, and I don't think I could come up with a shout out any better than that, other than, yeah, go watch Riff Raff, follow the podcast if you don't already, at We Didn't Peak on Instagram.
What's your Instagram?
Mine, of course, is Chances Loud on all platforms.
That's right.
Subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. And that's that. All right. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.